One of those things I just never get bored of. I'd like to talk about Birchas Kohanim. Anyone make it to shul this past Yontif? Okay, let me ask you a different question. Is anyone here from the Five Towns? Okay, that's better. Fine. Okay, so we had Birchas Kohanim this Yontif, and Birchas Kohanim for me is actually my favorite part of Yontif, because, you know, on our side of the mechitza, the men put a talus over their heads, and if you have little kids, the little kids sort of cuddle with you underneath the talus. It's very, it's like a very bonding kind of experience. I know when I was young, I used to cuddle with my father under his talus. Now, Baruch Hashem, my kids cuddle under my talus. It's a very bonding, emotionally laden experience. And also, it only happens in Yontif, so it's a few times a year. We had an unexpected visitor that happens to be a home for mentally disabled adults in my neighborhood, and the young men daven in my shul. They're wonderful. They're very friendly. They're very warmly incorporated and integrated into our shul. But I was standing with my talis. Two of my kids were underneath the talis with me, and all of a sudden, I hear some other fellow just sort of cuddles in with us. So we welcomed him under our talis, and I hope he enjoyed it. I'd like to share with you a story. I believe it's true. There might be a detail or two that is an exaggeration. The end of the story, there might be different versions, but as far as I know, the basic parameters of the story is true. And it talks about the koach habracha, the koach of a bracha that a Jew has. And with that, we'll use that as a segue to discuss Birchas Kohanim in general. So during World War II, you know what happened in Europe. And at one point in the war, I don't know exactly what year it was, but there was a group of yeshiva students, or they were, I don't know if they were young rabbanim or they were yeshiva students, they were caught in Italy. And they were facing deportation. Italy was under Mussolini, I believe, and he was friendly with Hitler. And they were facing deportation back to Germany. I guess they were trying to escape Germany. And they were facing deportation to be sent back to Germany, and obviously it was not going to be pleasant what they would face if and when they make it back to Germany. So the Jewish community in America found out about this, and the Rosh Yeshiva of the Lakewood Yeshiva, I heard you mention that I had learned there at some point, the Beis Medrash Gavoa in Lakewood, was Rav Aaron Cutler at the time. And he heard about this, and he felt that we have to do whatever we can to save these, I think it was 24 Jewish yeshiva students who are in Italy. What could we do to save them, to prevent them from being sent to the death camps, to the crematoria in Germany, in Poland? And so he turned to a gentleman who lived on the Lower East Side named Irving Bunim. I don't know if any of you heard his name, but Irving Bunim was like the macher. He was the big guy, the activist, the community activist, going back to the 30s and 40s. I remember my grandmother told me that he used to give a Pirkei Avos shiur that was very well known and in the Lower East Side going back to that time period. So Rav Aaron Cutler asked Mr. Irving Bunim, he wasn't a rabbi, he was an activist, and the yeshiva asked him, what can we do to save these yeshiva boys in Italy? So, what connections do we have with Mussolini's government, the Italian fascist government in America? Mr. Bunim said, I have an idea. There's a mafia in New York. We could try to speak to the mafia godfather, Joe Bonanno. You could look him up. It's a real person. The head of the Bonanno crime family. So they figure out, they use whatever connections they have, and they make their way to get an appointment with Joe Bonanno, the boss, they called him, the boss of the Bonanno crime family. And they're figuring out who's going to go. The Rosh Hashiva said, Mr. Bunim, you'll go, and I'll go. There was one problem. The Rosh Hashiva of Aaron Cutler didn't speak any English, or just a broken English. He spoke Yiddish. He was European. And Mr. Bunim would be the interpreter and basically talk, and Rabbi Cutler would just sort of stand there to be, just for his presence. So they're ushered in. I don't know if they're frisked on the way in, but they're ushered in to meet Joe Bonanno. And Joe Bonanno is sitting at his desk, and Mr. Bunim starts speaking about this and about that, and about how grateful we are for the meeting and the opportunity to speak with you. And Joe Bonanno points, who's this man? Who's this man? So Mr. Bunim thinks for a second, and figures, you have to talk to people in their own language, right? So Mr. Bynum said, he's the godfather of the Jewish people. He said, the Jewish people? The whole Jewish people. Okay? So as they're sitting there, Mr. Banana says, tell the rabbi I want a blessing from him. So Mr. Bynum turns to Rav Aaron Cutler and says, Evil a bracha from the Rav. The Gentile wants a bracha from you, from the Rosh Hashiva. So the Rosh Hashiva responded in Yiddish. He said, I give him a bracha that he should live a long life and die in his bed. I guess for a mafioso, that's a bracha. So Mr. Banana said, I like that. I like that. And they talked, they discussed what they did, and he promised in a few weeks he would take care of the issue, and indeed, they arranged through this meeting that those yeshiva boys indeed were sent wherever they had to be sent, and they weren't deported back to the death camps in Germany. Now this is where the ending is, where I don't know exactly what the details were. Something that goes like this. 20 years later or so, a fancy car pulls up to the streets of Lakewood, New Jersey, near the yeshiva. And two well-dressed Italian men get out and say, we want to speak to the rabbi, the chief rabbi. So they call the Rosh Yeshiva, who is also a Rabbi Cutler. It was Rabbi Cutler's son. Shneur Cutler was the son of the previous Rosh Yeshiva. And he comes down and says, I understand you want to speak to Rabbi Cutler. That's me. They said, no, we're looking for a much older man. We're looking for a very elderly man. He said, oh, I'm sorry, that was my father of blessed memory. He passed away a few years ago. He's no longer with us. And they said, our father told us that he attributes his long years and his long life to the blessing that he got from your father. He just died at age 97 because of heart failure in his sleep. And we wanted to get a blessing from him also. You could look up the details. Look up Joe Banana. You'll find that this is just about accurate in terms of what happens. So the koach of a bracha is something that we can't take lightly. Marvin tells us, "Al tibirchas hediot kalabeinach." Even if somebody simple, even if it's not a Rosh Hashiva, not somebody big, somebody simple gives you a bracha, don't take it lightly. Take it seriously. So I want to talk about this morning is birchat kohanim, birchas kohanim. That does anyone know, by the way, is Birchat Kohanim a mitzvah in the Torah, or is it a mitzvah d'rabbanan, or is it not a mitzvah at all? Three choices. Is it a mitzvah in the Torah? Is it a mitzvah d'rabbanan, or is it not a mitzvah, not an obligation at all? What do you say? Mitzvah in the Torah. Does anyone know which parasha it may appear in? I'll give you one hint. Okay. The hint is that I was asked to speak about the parsha this week. This week is Parshas Naso. It's a mitzvah in Parshas Naso. And this week's parsha is the mitzvah of Birchas Kohanim. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in this coming week's parsha, says to the Kohanim, Ko tevarchu es b'nei Yisrael. This is how you should give a bracha to b'nei Yisrael. Okay, so this week's parsha. Now, I want to ask you a question. If there's a mitzvah for the Kohanim, mitzvah d'oraisa, in this week's parsha, for the Kohanim to give a bracha to B'nai Yisrael, my question that I'd like to ask now is, when is this mitzvah? Meaning, every mitzvah has a time to do. Some mitzvahs you do once a year, some mitzvahs you do every day, some mitzvahs you do once a month, once a week. When is there a mitzvah to do Birchat Kohanim? Is it a mitzvah to do, let's talk about the Beis HaMikdash. Originally, it was a mitzvah in the Beis HaMikdash that they had, the Kohanim had to give a bracha to whoever's in there in the Beis HaMikdash. How often was that mitzvah? Do we have any Sephardim here? Wow. Every school has to have its... more. Okay, Baruch Hashem, good. So, have you ever been to shul on a weekday? A weekday, no? Other than like maybe for a bris, maybe? Or something like that? No, you? On a weekday?
Yeah.
Yeah? Do they do Birchat Kohanim? I don't know if you remember, but they do.
They do.
Yeah. Sfaradim do Birchat Kohanim every single day of the year. Ashkenazim do it when? Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, that's correct, as well as? No, not on Shabbos. On Yom Tov, yes. Three regalim. Sukkot, Pesach, Shavuos, as well as Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. Only on Yom Tovim. So, we have something funny. We're talking about a mitzvah d'oraisa. A mitzvah d'oraisa, why would there be a difference between Sephardim, who do it every day, and Ashkenazim, who do it only on Yom Tov? Do you eat kenyos? Do you eat rice on Pesach? You do eat rice on Pesach? Do you eat rice on Pesach? Anyone else eat rice on Pesach? Okay, rice is kidneys, and there's a minhag, Ashkenazim don't eat kidneys because we don't eat rice on Pesach, we don't eat beans, we don't eat rice, cholent, it has to be a little bit different. We don't have rice, we don't have beans, we don't have all kinds of things, peas, corn, it's kidneys. But that's a difference because it's a minhag, there's a minhag that Sephardim, you know, they continue to, it's really not chametz, you eat it. And Ashkenazim developed the minhag to not eat kidneys. But I don't understand something. That's a minhag, but when we're talking about Birchat Kohen, which is this week's parasha, is going to be an explicit pasuk in the Torah. How could there be a difference between Sephardim who do it every single day of the year, 365 days a year, and Ashkenazim who do it maybe a dozen times a year, not even. 2 days Pesach, 2 days Shavuos, 2 days the end of Pesach, 2 days, you know, it's, how could that be? Any ideas? How there could be such a gigantic difference between Ashkenazim and Sephardim if it's a mitzvah from the Torah to say Brichas Kohanim? I want to tell you something that's a little bit weird. A little bit weird. It's a little bit troubling, actually. Really, 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 the Sephardim are right. They might be the minority in this classroom, but they're correct. We should all be doing Brichas Kohanim, at least in Shul, every single day of the year. It's a mitzvah d'oraisa that applies every day of the year. But you know what? For some reason, and it's not really clear, maybe we'll suggest one possibility. For some reason, there is only Brichas Kohanim on Yom Tov. Do you know why? It's not clear why. It seems that it just sort of stopped at some point in history. We don't know really when, we don't know really why. But the suggestion is because there's a special halacha that applies to Birchas Kohanim. Is any of your families Kohanim, by the way? Cats? Kohanim? Okay. Fine. So there are a few Kohanim families here. When the Kohen gets up and makes his bracha, he says, Asher Kedishanu, and he adds one word that we don't have by any other bracha of Asher Kedishanu v'mitzvosa v'tzivanu. No other bracha of Asher Kedishanu has this word. Levarech es Amo Yisrael be'ahava. What's be'ahava? With love. Did you ever do a mitzvah like Asher Kedishanu, you commanded us to do Netilas Yadayim with love? Or to do, I don't know, Alachilas Morati, the Moratid Matzah with love? But the mitzvah of Asher Kedishanu says, Savitzana Bikdushaso Shel Aaron, I'm sorry. Levarecha samo Yisrael be'ahava, the Kohen have to give us a bracha with love. So it could be, and this is a little bit of a stretch, it could be that the Ashkenazim felt that when are Jews able to feel a certain happiness with one another, a certain love to one another, when you're running to work on a regular, you know, 6:45 on a Tuesday morning and you're running to the LIRR, it's very hard to get the emotions out and be able to give this bracha, the Birchas Kohanim, with love, with care. But at least a few times a year when you're a little more relaxed, you're going to have some good food, you're able to sleep in a little bit, oh, then the emotions could flow a little bit more, then you could have a little bit of feeling for somebody else, and then you could give the bracha properly with love. I want to tell you the story again. The details are very unclear historically, but perhaps the greatest Torah mind in the past 400 years was the Gra, the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon was the most brilliant and most prolific human being in the Torah world in the past 300-400 years. He lived in the early mid-1700s, and he decided that the Minhag of Ashkenaz was wrong and the Sephardim really are right. And you know what he wanted to do? Anyone know where the Vilna Gaon lived? No. Who knows where the Vilna Gaon lived? Anyone want a hint? Yeah? Great! Okay, thank you. You see, people are listening carefully. The Vilna Gaon lived in Vilna. He was the Rav of Vilna. He was actually not the Rav of Vilna. He sat and learned in Vilna. They had a Rav separate from him. And he decided that he's going to change the minhag of the Ashkenazim. He's going to start to do Birchas Kohanim every day like the Torah says we should, like the Halacha requires we should, like the Sfaradim do. But Ashkenazim haven't for whatever reason. And therefore, the historical details of this are very unclear. The night before he planned to have the restarting of the right minhag that we should start doing Birchas Kohanim every single morning in shul, I think he was like brought to jail or something like that. So they took it and said, let's wait. Years later, they said, we're going to try this again. And the night before, I think in Volozhin, where his student, Reb Chaim Volozhin, lived, they decided we're going to try again to reinstate the right minhag, to have Birchas Kohanim every single day. The night before that was supposed to happen in shul, there's a gigantic fire. Half of the city was destroyed from a fire. And they sort of, the Chacham took it as a sign, even though usually we don't follow the signs, but this was, a significant enough of an occurrence that they decided Hashem's trying to tell us we should leave the minhag Ashkenaz as it is. Sfaradim, they're doing what's right. Ashkenazim, we're not, but that's the minhag that we have. We don't do Birchas Kohanim every day. What I'd like to really talk about, and we'll finish, we do the first half, now we'll do the second half of what I want to talk about, is understand the brachos of Birchas Kohanim. Does anybody know, Birchas Kohanim is a bunch of brachos put together. Yivarechecha Adonai v'yishmerecha, Ya'er Adonai panav eilecha v'yichonecha, Yisa Adonai panav eilecha v'yaseim lecha shalom. Is anyone familiar with that line? When do we say that in davening? Brachos, after which bracha? We'll wait 10 seconds for you to think. After which bracha do we say Yivarecha Hashem v'yishmerecha? After? Birchas HaTorah. Why do we say it after Birchas HaTorah? Well, what do you want to do right after you say a bracha on a mitzvah? You want to do the mitzvah. What do you do right after you say a shahakal? You eat. What do you do after you say a eat? You take a bite. What do you do after you say any bracha on any, after al achilas mar, you eat mar. What do you do after you say any bracha? You do the mitzvah right away. So if the mitzvah that we're saying the bracha on is Birchas HaTorah, what do we want to do right away? We want to learn Torah right away. So how do we learn Torah right away? We take a beautiful pasuk. Yivarechecha Hashem v'yishmerecha. So I want to understand that pasuk. And that pasuk is made out of three psukim. And because Rebbetzin Wolf invited me to speak here today, I'm going to share with you a perspective that I heard from her father, Rabbi Willig Shlita, about Birchas Kohanim. So when the Chazan refers to Birchas Kohanim, he calls it Bracha HaMishuleshes. Mishuleshes is a word you're not familiar with. But what's the shorash of the word Mishuleshes? Shalosh. Right? It's the three-pronged bracha. And three psukim. Yivarechecha Hashem v'yishmerecha. Ya'er Hashem panav eilecha. V'chunecha. Yisa Hashem panav eilecha. V'yaseim lecha shalom. It's a three-pronged bracha. The question that I have is that each bracha that we have, let's look at for the first three words. Yivarechecha Hashem v'yishmerecha. What are we asking for? What's Yivarechecha Hashem v'yishmerecha? What are we asking for? What do you say? Yivarechecha, He should bless you, Hashem. V'yishmerecha, what's v'yishmerecha? And what? I'm sorry? Guard us. So how many things is that? Two. So you have two in the first pasuk. The next one. Ya'er Hashem panav eilecha, may Hashem shine His face on you, v'chunecha, and give you chen. What's chen? Favor, grace, people like you. So that's also two things. Ya'er Hashem panav eilecha, Hashem should shine on you and give you grace. That's also two. We're up to four already. And then finally, the end of the bracha is Yisa Hashem panav eilecha, Hashem should face you, turn towards you. V'yaseim lecha, shalom, give you peace. That's also two brachas. So it ends up being that they're really six brachas. It's two plus two plus two. And yet, if you open up a siddur, the Chazan, when he refers to Birchas Kohanim, calls it bracha ha-mishuleshes, the three-pronged bracha. If it's three prongs, then why is it really six brachas? And I want to share with you this thought that I think has a lot of, I think you'll enjoy and I think you'll take with you. I'm going to ask, I guess, the million-dollar question. I think all of us have a natural interest in being wealthy. I teach in college, and when kids are in college, they want to do well so they can get a good job, get into a good master's program. In all my years teaching in college, about 12 years teaching in college, I've had one student in my entire career who said to me explicitly, I don't want to make a lot of money. Everybody else says, I want to make a lot of money. And they do this and they do that. They get internships. They want to build a resume. They want to get into the best schools they can get into so they can make a lot of money. One guy in my whole career says, I'm not interested in making money. He happens to be working with, he's a wonderful kid and he's doing wonderful things for the Jewish people, but he's not interested in making money. Everybody else is, though. Is being wealthy a bracha?
Yes.
I think so. Right? Being wealthy is a bracha. That's what we typically assume. But I want to share with you an interesting thought. There's a sefer, Chovos HaLevavos, Duties of the Heart. Chovos HaLevavos tells you, it's a Jewish hashkafa sefer that was written about 900 years ago, 1,000 years ago, one of the Rishonim. And he said that there are three kinds of wealth. Listen to this, because it's a really important idea. Three kinds of wealth. You know what the three kinds of wealth are? There's wealth that's a bracha, that's what we typically think. But there are two more kinds of wealth. There's wealth that's a curse. Could anybody think of wealth that's a curse? How could wealth be a curse? How could wealth be a curse? Yeah? People are jealous of you. How else could wealth be a curse, yeah?
It blocks your judgment.
Sorry?
It blocks your judgment.
It blocks your objectivity, your judgment, your way to look at things.
You use it for
You use it for bad things, 100%. How else could wealth be a curse? Did anyone hear of Michael Jackson?
Yeah.
They've heard of Michael Jackson here? In this school? Okay. I want you to do research when you get home. Michael Jackson, we would assume, would be a very wealthy person, right? Try to, if you could find online some tour of his ranch, I think it's called the Neverlands Ranch or something like that. Get a tour of his ranch. He had his own private railroad inside his ranch. It's something to see. And he was fabulously wealthy. Do you know that when he died, he was $500 million in debt? Michael Jackson, who is the biggest pop star in all of history, was the most well-known human being in the world at his time, 15 years ago. He was the most well-known name in the world, in the entire world, more than any president or any Russian prime minister. The biggest known name in the world was Michael Jackson, and when he died in 2009, he owed $500 million. Does that make sense to you? I don't know if you know about his life, if he ended up with a happy life or not such a happy life. He ended up, whatever, it's not, you know, whatever, how things ended up for him weren't so great. How many more minutes? Two? Three? Okay. So I'm going to share with you, finish off with this. There's a kind of wealth that could be a curse. Sometimes when some person gets wealth, it could be used for bad things. And there's another kind of wealth. There's a wealth, says the Chovos HaLevavos, that's not a bracha and not a curse. Then what could it be?
Neutral.
He says, Chovos HaLevavos says it with one additional twist. You could have wealth that's a bracha, wealth that's a klala, or wealth that's a test. What does it mean, wealth that's a test? How could wealth be a test? Well, it really depends what you do with it. You could make it into a bracha for yourself by using it for good reasons, good things. Or a person could choose to squander and use it for bad things and it ends up being a curse for them. Could bring bad things to them. Listen to this. Yivarechecha Hashem. Hashem should give you bracha. What does that refer to? That refers to, we're asking Hashem, when we say Yivarechecha Hashem, what's Yivarechecha Hashem? He should give us a bracha. That means wealth. That's how Chazal understands. It means give us wealth. But what happens when we have wealth? Could be all kinds of things could happen. Could bring us to good things, could bring us to bad things. I never felt a need to walk around with a bodyguard. I never felt the need that I have to walk around with a bodyguard. But you know what? People who are exceedingly wealthy especially in certain, you know, Latin American countries and Mexico and other South American countries, the very wealthy people, they have to walk around with bodyguards. Why? Because it's not a bracha for them in a certain sense, because they could be kidnapped, they could be held in ransom. It happens to Jewish people also in Mexico, South America. So we ask Hashem, Yivarecha Hashem, let me have bracha, but also, V'yishmerecha. In other words, the Yishmerecha is not a separate bracha from Yivarechacha, but the Yishmerecha is a way to protect the bracha that we ask Hashem for. When we say that we have three sets of brachas, each one is asking for a bracha and then asking for Hashem to protect us and enable us to keep that bracha that we have. I'll give you one other example and we'll finish with that. Ya'er Hashem panav elecha v'chuneka. Ya'er Hashem panav elecha. The word or, ya'ar, ya'er, from the word or. Does anyone know where we see in Tanakh the word or? La'yhudim haisa. Ora v'simcha v'sasim v'yikar. We say in Havdal, where's that pasuk from? Anyone know? La'yhudim haisa ora v'simcha v'sasim v'yikar. I'll give you a hint. We say it all together. Everybody in the tzibur says it together. Yes, in the middle of Megillas Esther, we say all together. La'yhudim haisa ora v'simcha v'sasim v'yikar. That word ora, almost done? That word ora, I apologize guys, we have, Chazal say, means the bracha of Torah. We ask Hashem, Yo'er Hashem, may Hashem shine His light on us, meaning give us the light of Torah. Torah is a great thing. Is there anything that could possibly go wrong with Torah? What could be bad? What could possibly be bad if a person has the bracha of Torah? Listen to this, we'll finish with this. You know, there's one thing that could possibly be bad about learning Torah. Did you ever open up a newspaper and you see a headline about a rabbi? That's the worst thing that could possibly happen. Somebody who has Torah and, God forbid, makes a chilul Hashem and is looked down at because of the Torah that they learned, that's the worst thing in the world. If they wouldn't be a rabbi, Joe Schmo does something wrong, Joe Schmo cheated on his taxes, God forbid. Okay, nobody really pays attention to that. But if a rabbi so-and-so cheats on his taxes, then all of a sudden the whole world is a terrible, terrible, terrible chilul Hashem, and it is a terrible chilul Hashem. So you know what we say? Yo'er Hashem panav elecha v'yichuneka. I'm sorry, Yo'er Hashem panav elecha, you should have the bracha of Torah. But what? Yichuneka. What's chen? Chen is favor. People should like us. People should look good, should look kindly upon us. Even when there's a bracha like Torah, which seems to have no negative part, even there's the opportunity, the possibility, chilul Hashem, we ask Hashem, let us have chen, let us people look kindly upon us. My friends, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Thank you, Mrs. Wolf, for inviting us. We should be zochet to all the brachas of Birchas Ponim, and have wonderful success in all your finals and end of the year. Thank you.